This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks very much, Sue. I'll get through this fairly quickly, I think. Good to be here because I think we'll have probably a more interesting time when we're having the panel discussion. So we'll leave plenty of time for questions and debates. Certainly, that's the bit I enjoy most about this, is getting onto that rather than hearing myself speak. So I will get onto it fairly quickly. Wait a minute. Welcome to the conference chair. Let's do the next bit. We've done that bit. Right. I hope we haven't got to go through the whole thing for the morning. Let's just... We might need somebody on the technology.
Can we have the technician, please?
Sorry?
We're working on it.
Oh, they're working on it. Right. That's what that flashing is.
I was so impressed with the speed that was going on.
Yes. That is my presentation. Did you catch it? Right, that's it. When I said I was going to be quick, that was it, right? Right, I think we're nearly there. Oh, good Lord, this is it. Mine is going through very quickly now, so go back a bit. We're nearly there. Oh, that's me. Right, now right, we're there, back to where we needed to be. Right, I just thought, I looked at the agenda of the day and it felt like that it would be good, it felt to me it would be a good idea just to talk a little bit about the nursing workforce in the round, because actually a lot of the things I'm going to say will apply to wherever the nursing workforce is, but perhaps to particularly think a bit about the community nursing workforce. There's a lot of focus on that at the moment, and I know we're going to get into some of those areas of discussion later on. And I know that you had and Milton, the Minister, here this morning, who I think announced the action plan around health visiting, so a lot of focus in that sort of area. Just to set the context, and I'm not going to spend ages looking at the white paper and what goes with it, but I think it is worth reminding ourselves, and I'll say a little more about it in a moment, of the Secretary of State's very clear priorities, which are reflected in all the stuff that's going through Parliament in the moment, in the bill, and all the papers that are supporting it. And it is very much about a very strong focus on patients and on clients. It is about moving effort, resource, and in many ways reward to really think about health outcomes. It is about people both individually and collectively being both, if you like, freer, more autonomous, but at the same time being much more accountable for what they do. Much more about the health of the public, you know, not just perhaps a narrow definition of public health, but the health of the public, and certainly a real focus on what we need to do about reforming long-term care. I won't go into much of that this afternoon, but for those of you I know working in the service, I think most of us agree that the current system that we have is not it's not sustainable in any sort of way, and we've got to really think about that, and there'll be a bill next year that will focus on all of that. So just reminding ourselves that those are his priorities, and what he often says a lot, which is one of the Picker Institute sayings, isn't it? No decision about me without me. And it's sort of very interesting that I think sometimes we're quite a long way away from here. I was at a dinner last night, actually, where Ursula was. We haven't seen each other for a while, but I think we've seen each other every day for the last 3 days, so here we are, a blessing. For me, anyway, probably not for her. In the middle of the dinner I was at, I had a phone call from a friend of mine whose husband was a bit breathless, had seen the doctor, seen his GP, who'd said, he said, I'm really well, really, and so I'm a bit worried. I sent him off for an angiogram, so he went to a hospital not a million miles away, and on Friday, and they said, oh, actually, we're really bothered about that. We've got a couple of arteries that are completely blocked and one that is significantly blocked, and we want to do a triple bypass. So that was a big shock to them because they weren't expecting it. And then they said, actually, we've got a cancellation this Tuesday, so we're going to keep you in over the weekend to prepare you for surgery on Tuesday. So on the one hand, it was a big shock. On the other hand, they were sort of pleased it was going to happen, and he hadn't had a heart attack. So, you know, story so far, so good. The frantic phone call that I got last night was because the consultant had come and said, you know, this is what we're going to do, da-da-da. There's always a chance that we cancel an operation if somebody gets admitted overnight and we haven't got an HDU bed for you to go into. So that was sort of all right. They understood the fact that obviously if somebody was really seriously ill, that they would take precedent. But it was followed up by a visit from what I think was the registrar. It's very difficult to get all this out of somebody when they're in a state on the phone, who sort of went through a lot of information very quickly, which included there's a 5% chance of you dying, which they heard as a very large chance, you know, even though, you know, I think when people mention death, anything other than 0.000 recurring feels like it's a, you know, very, so there was, plus the fact that he rapidly went through the how this surgeon operated, which was, you know, we take the heart out, we don't stop it, we cut here, we do all this. So, you know, a lot of information, and they were like, you know, hey, this is all too much. Followed by, well, we've got real problems in the HDU, and it's very likely we won't operate on you tomorrow anyway. And then he left, you know, and then this was 8:45 at night, whereby the two of them were in a terrible state, you know. So on the one hand, having been given a load of information, but actually no real thinking about actually how you might pace that. And, you know, so I was several conversations to about midnight last night and trying to deflect, saying, look, there's not much you can do now, let's wait till the morning, sort of ring me in the morning, thinking at least, you know. And eventually he went down to about 11:30, but not before. But it was up to 11 o'clock. He had no idea whether he was going down or not. So he'd been starved, and nurses kept coming along trying to do things to him, and he kept saying, I might not be going down. And the great quote of all was, the nurse said, oh, well, we don't know anything about it, but then, hey, they never tell us anything, so we have no idea what's happening. So, you know, I mean, you know, so, you know, that compounds, doesn't it? So this is nothing about no decision about me without me. A sort of, I'm going to give this person a load of information that they can't really take on board. Then I'm going to really, and they're already sort of stressed out of their minds about, I never thought there was anything wrong with me. And actually, I think Fred, my friend, I think is just mightily relieved that he's now under an anaesthetic, because I think he was in such a state, and his wife I've sort of sent off for a large drink and said, don't ring me between these times, because I'm talking, but please ring me after 4:30. And I'm sure she will, because she's in a state, you know, thinking of it. So, you know, when we actually think about it, you know, the sort of no decision about me without me, we've got a little way to go in terms of what we need to do. When the bill was launched into Parliament, Andrew Lansley made this quote, we spent more, others spent better. And that is very strongly behind this government's real push around improving health outcomes in terms of absolutely making sure that the money we spend is spent on the things that really matter and that improve outcomes. So, you know, that's the sort of reality which most of us live in. And I think the difference, so I put on these, you see, that's me practicing at the weekend doing that. I can't imagine how people manage to do that sort of pole vaulting, but anyway, there we are. I think some of the things that, when we go back to the Secretary of State's priorities, that people say to me is, well, you know, hey, we're doing that already. There's nothing very new around that. And I think in a sense that's true. But I think the difference is what I've tried to illustrate here is there's something about the pace and there's something about the reach. A real fast pace in trying to get to a position where we've made some of these changes, and a real reach both into communities and into services that I think we're just beginning to see what that begins to look like. So some of the aspirations may not be very new to us, but the speed with which they need to be achieved and the reach, I think, will be become very apparent as we go through the next year or two. So if that's the background, what does that mean, if you like, for nurses and the nursing workforce? And some of you may be familiar with these sort of attributes that have been in several documents that we've worked on with clinicians, patients and others through the department and through the system and with other colleagues about, as we look to the future, this is the sort of nurse, wherever they are, that we need to focus on. This isn't just about community, this is about nurses in the round. We definitely need people to be much better at focusing on health and using the opportunities that we all have around focusing on health, not just the people that have sort of health in their title, or it's just health visitors or public health nurses. And we need a much greater focus, I think, in both acute care, in some aspects of mental health care, really making sure that health is a very strong part of it. Most people who access our services the friends who I talked about earlier, you know, once they're over the trauma of all of this, I know we'll get very focused on, so what do I do to remain healthy? What are the things that I need to do to keep me healthy? What do I need to do differently? Because, you know, he's keen to live a full life and she's keen to support him. So very, very up for those sorts of discussions. Certainly need to be at the forefront and often are at innovation and the expert practitioners. They are increasingly providing complex care at home, and that isn't just about community services as we understand them. It's going to be about nurses who move from acute into community and back again. It isn't just physical health, it's mental health and other areas. And then some of the things that we go through there, the sort of partnership in terms of expert to expert, in terms of our relationship with patients, certainly moving away from, you know, I'm the person that knows it all, I'm going to sort of dump all this information on you and then, you know, sort of rush away because I think I've done my job. Increasingly being entrepreneurial, not necessarily always being in a social enterprise, but working in that sort of entrepreneurial way, certainly about transformation and quality. So those are some of the things that I think are there. I think the opportunities for primary and community care delivery are very high at the moment. And as I say, this isn't just about that what you might think of as the traditional community nurse workforce. This, I think, increasingly will be the area for many nurses who will, in their career, either work across, work in, move backwards and forwards. We know how high profile the community primary care agenda is. It's very high on the political agenda. You will have heard that around the health visitor announcement this morning. It's very, very high, a lot of attention being paid to other aspects of the primary care services as well in terms of how you start to shift care across some of the boundaries. Certainly much more preventative and complex long-term conditions, a real role for nurses not to just play a part in it, but to lead those services. You know, and I think that's some of the challenge as we go forward. It's, you know, Ursula and I have had this discussion in different ways of leadership in terms of GP consortia and all the challenges there are there. Lots of general practitioners want nurses to work with them and for them and really value them. I think the challenge is to say actually there are nurses who are going to lead, who are going to be an equal partner. I use the word partner, not as a, you know, as a general practice partner necessarily, but as a partner. Actually, we've got to have more nurses stepping up to the plate and saying actually we can lead those services because we're the best people to do it. I've mentioned the consortia. We need to, I think, be pretty forensic about the changes that we need to make to skill mix to deliver care. That doesn't mean to say that, and I'm sure we'll get into it in the debate in a moment, that isn't to say that that means, you know, that everything has got to be sort of dumbed down. But it does mean, I think, that we have to really think very carefully about our services and say, where do we need the skills that a registered nurse needs to provide? Where can we look at different supports? What does it mean? And I think we're going to have to be... we're going to have to be very challenging to ourselves around some of that. And I think the challenge around the workforce will be, at the moment, we're in a recession, things are difficult, lots of people are attracted into some of our careers because they see them as very, you know, safe employment careers, but that won't last. And we will go back to the challenge that we've always had around our workforce. We need to be really clear about it. We need to make sure that, as we say, we're promoting that entrepreneurial behaviour in terms of not just being entrepreneurs, but actually every individual practitioner looking at how they can deliver their services in that sort of a way. And as I say, we need to make sure that when we're about talking about local clinical leadership, we've got really strong nurse leaders, as we have in many parts of the country, leading in those areas. So lots of opportunities. Opportunities there in terms of where we work across organisational boundaries. We've got some very good success stories, and then we've got some areas where we're not making much progress. So, you know, we've got some people who, and some organisations that support their staff to work that way. We've got others who are very bounded by the boundaries of their organisation, and we need to do much more. We need to get better at being upstream. Certainly technology is, we're not going to make these changes across the piece into primary and community services if we don't move swiftly around some of the technology agenda. We are still, many community services are still hugely under-resourced around technology, just ordinary technology. I'm not talking about, you know, WYSI, you know, something we've never heard of before. We're not going to do it if we can't manage that technology. So I think if we're just to transform services, I'm nearly there so we can get into the discussion. and it's why there are some of those photos up there. We do have to do a bit of letting go of the past. You know, it's hard. It's very, very hard, isn't it? You know, when change comes, we fear it because we fear that what we lose will be more valuable than what we gain. And that's why it's difficult. And letting go of the past is really difficult. I think the challenge, and Anne may have said something this morning when she was talking about the health visiting challenge. We've on the whole got a health visiting workforce. Of course it varies across the country, of course it does. Lots of places running very vibrant services and working very hard and are frankly there, I think, in terms of the vision for the health service that there is around the health visiting. But quite a lot of people feeling, a lot of health visitors feeling pretty demoralised, pretty struggling because of the work that's facing them. And we're not going to make those changes if we can't shift ourselves and our service a bit away from, you know, what it was all like, whether it was or it wasn't all that time ago, and what we need to do for the future. We need to understand where we are now, you know, what does it really mean now for us? And as it says there, look out for opportunities and creative solutions. We definitely have to be much better at measuring things that matter so that we can absolutely be clear about what works. And we need to be much better at looking at outcomes. It's pretty poor in many of our services because we've not invested in it. It's not because people are poor and because some of the areas are traditionally very, very difficult. We need to do some of that if we're to transform our services. And, you know, my fear when we have, when we're facing a very, very big sort of fiscal challenge, when people are, you know, working flat out in some of the areas they're in, one of the big tragedies of something like the health visitor changes is that we put an enormous amount of resource into a service and we don't get the transformation that we need. That would be a tragedy for our families and our communities. You know, it's not just a tragedy around money, it's a tragedy. So transforming our services and not just having more of the same is really, really important. And that's the same when we look at other services across the piece. We need to be very, very clear that's what we're doing. So finally, I think looking to the future, quoted Charles Handy for a long time, but that's Charles Handy quoting Bernard Shaw. The future belongs to the unreasonable ones, the ones who look forward, not backwards, who are certain only of uncertainty and who have the ability and the confidence to think completely differently. I think that's what we're going to need around the workforce. You know, more of the same isn't going to hit it. We're going to have to think, how do we do it differently? And I mean, the good news is that I go around visiting all sorts of places. If I have more time, I could give you some examples where you actually begin to see people who are working very differently and delivering absolutely fantastic services. And so, as ever, you go and look at a place and you think, wow, they're doing something really fantastic here. They often don't think they are. They think they're just doing something very ordinary. Lots of people prepared to do something differently. We've got to make that the norm rather than the exception. Thanks, Sue.
Thank you, Christine.